Well, I wonder what you think is the biggest problem in your life right now. There are really two kinds of ways of answering that question. You can either see your biggest problem as something that is happening externally or something that is happening internally. You can either say the circumstances of your life right now, the things that are happening to you, they're the worst things in your life right now. Or you can say, well, actually, the problem is my heart. If my heart was right, I would be able to respond to the things of this world in a much better way. Sadly, it isn't. And so often, I respond in a way that isn't in accord with my faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. Imagine a man named Ron. Ron doesn't see his own sin. His boss has it in for him. Always seems to overlook him for promotions. His daughter is rebelling. She never seems to be willing to do what he asks her to do. And the kids of the youth group he teaches, well, they never seem to listen. This generation, they just don't pay attention like they did in his day. Sure, he's done some things wrong, and as a good Christian, he recognizes that he's a sinner in need of a savior. But to him, it seems that all of the problems are outside of him. But if you look at it from the perspective of others, you see where the problem really lies. You see, his boss, well, she overlooks him for promotions because she keeps hearing about how he vents at other employees and tears them down again and again. His daughter, well, she's rebelling against her father because she's sick of seeing him blow up at her mother. And she has very little respect for the man who would do that. The kids at the youth group, yeah, they could behave better, but they're experiencing a grumpy youth leader who doesn't show much of the joy of the Lord on a Friday night. What is at the heart of all of Ron's problems is that his heart is not in the right place. And in particular, that Ron responds with anger to the difficult situations he faces. Perhaps as you come this evening, even mentioning the word anger gives you a bit of a prick of conscience because you know at some point over this last week you've lost your temper in a way that you shouldn't have. Perhaps it's something that you can't associate with. But there is a good chance that anger is the silent assassin that is damaging your life in a way that you aren't always able to see. What is anger? Well, interestingly, as we go through the Bible as a whole, sometimes anger can be positive. It can be right to be angry against sin and injustice. So, for example, if you watch a documentary about World War II and the concentration camps, if you get to the end of that and you aren't angry, there's something wrong with you. You should be angry. You should be frustrated that something like that has happened in the world. But in Proverbs, anger is particularly the sinful type of anger, the type of anger that is a wrong response to a situation. And particularly, the type of anger that is described is a heat anger, very timely. It is a hot-tempered response to a negative situation. So, Proverbs 29:22. I am going to be hopping all over the place. You are welcome to either flick with me or just listen along. I promise you I'll read what the verses really say. But Proverbs 29:22 says, "An angry person stirs up conflict, and a hot-tempered person commits many sins." Now, not every translation uses the word hot-tempered, but actually it's a really good translation because the word can mean hot and it can mean anger. And that's the sense that the Hebrews had. They have this sense that when anger comes along, it's hot. And I think we can all recognize that, can't we? That when we're angry, we're not cool and calm and collected. We've got a heat. We're responding off the cuff. Imagine a husband and wife. The wife texts her husband as he's on the way home and asks him to get some milk, which they need for breakfast the next morning. He comes through the door. She asks him to give it to her, and he's forgotten. That's two possible responses to that. Nothing that she does at this moment is going to change the fact that he hasn't got the milk. She can calmly say, "It doesn't matter. everyone forgets some things. Would you be able to go out and get some more? Or she can lose it. You never listen to me. You never remember. You're so focused on yourself. There's a cool response and there's a hot response. Just one particular tiny piece of suffering, but it's responded to in two very different ways. We often use words of heat to describe anger ourselves. If you look at the little emoji for anger on your phone, it's red with steam coming out of its ears. We say that you're hot under the collar. We talk about people in hotter climates being a bit more angry and feisty. We have this same sense that the people who had Hebrew as their first language had, that anger is heat. And what's bad about these hot-tempered responses? There's a number of things that we see in Proverbs. Firstly, it causes sin. So the verse that we've just read again says, an angry person stirs up conflict, and a hot-tempered person commits many sins. Last week, we were looking at alcohol, and we were seeing that when you're drunk, you can very easily do things that you wouldn't do in normal circumstances. And it's the same with anger. You almost are switching off your brain and you respond in ways that you will regret in 5 minutes' time. That's the way that anger works. Anger commits many sins. It's also selfish. Proverbs 18 verse 1 says, an unfriendly person pursues selfish ends and against all sound judgment starts quarrels. They're unfriendly, they're causing quarrels. And this is purely selfish. In fact, if you want to know what your primary reason for selfishness is, you can just trace back what you get angry about. If you get angry about people insulting you, then you care about yourself. If you get angry about your kids being hurt, then your kids really matter to you. Anger shows us what is our interest. And sadly, time and time again, what our anger shows us is that we care far too much about ourselves and our own reputations. Anger against injustice would be fine, but too often anger is just because we don't feel like we're getting the recognition we deserve. Anger can also be divisive. Chapter 15, verse 18 says, a hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. It's almost like there's a little spark of a fire, and it can go one of two ways. If an angry person comes in, they've just poured a whole load of gasoline on the fire, and it just explodes. Whereas the patient person, it's like throwing water over that flame so it is completely quenched. When we're angry, it stirs up the conflict. It makes it 10 times worse than it was in the first case. And anger also leads to bad decisions. Proverbs 14, verse 17 says, a quick-tempered person does foolish things. The one who devises evil schemes is hated. He does foolish things. Foolish in Proverbs, remember, is doing things that God wouldn't have you do. Behaving in a way that is wicked, that does not understand the way that the world works. We make bad decisions when we're angry. One example is given later on in Proverbs of a person committing perjury, lying in a court because they're angry at their neighbor. So Proverbs 24, 28 to 29 says, do not testify against your neighbor without cause. Would you use your lips to mislead? Do not say, I'll do to them as they've done to me. I'll pay them back for what they did. This person is going to go in a court and they're going to lie about their neighbour just because they want to get back at them. Now, we probably haven't done that exact thing. I hope we haven't done that. But you know the errors that you can commit, the bad decisions that you make because you want to get back at someone. Perhaps you twist the truth. Perhaps you fire off an email, a text, and then 10 seconds later you wish you could delete it. Perhaps you use insulting language to tear someone down. It leads to bad decisions. And it repeatedly damages, Proverbs tells us. So Proverbs 19, verse 19, says, a hot-tempered person must pay the penalty. Rescue them, and you'll have to do it again. Now, this is actually telling you how to deal with a hot-tempered person. It's saying, you're going to have to let this hot-tempered person go through the consequences of their actions. Otherwise, they're never going to learn from it. They'll just keep doing the same thing again and again and again. That's obviously helpful for learning how to deal with anger, but it also shows us the nature of anger. It's kind of addictive. Unless you see the consequences of your actions, you will keep doing it again and again and again. It's also a burden to others. Proverbs 27, verse 3 says this: "Stone is heavy and sand a burden, but a fool's provocation is heavier than both." Have you ever had to carry a sandbag? Until I carried a sandbag for the first time, I thought sand was light. It's light in little handfuls, isn't it? But you get a sandbag, it's quite heavy. If you're carrying a couple of them at a time, or a big, whopping, great big stone, those are burdens to carry. And yet the writer of Proverbs says, well, someone who is angry is much greater burden. Have you ever experienced that? Maybe there's someone on your staff team who just loses their temper really easily, and everyone's kind of dancing around them the whole time, trying not to set them off. It's a burden on everyone in the team that this person can't control their emotions. And the last thing that Proverbs tells us is a problem with anger is that anger can ruin marriages. Proverbs 21:19 says very politically correctly, "Better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and nagging wife." Now, it's not one we're going to put outside the church, but nagging there, the word nagging literally means angry. It's the same word as what's translated angry elsewhere. So I don't know enough to know whether nagging is a good thing, a good translation, but anger's the same root. It's the same thing that's happening. So when you're in a relationship and you're quarrelsome and you're angry, you're causing fights, whether you're a wife or a husband, it's a painful thing for the marriage. I mean, what is it like to live in a desert? I mean, we're getting a bit of a flavour of it today, aren't we? You can't sleep, you can't eat, you can't find drink, you don't feel like you can rest. It's like living a war zone. That's what it's like to live with someone who is arguing and fighting and fighting, who doesn't see the relationship of marriage as a team, but he sees it as a combat, a battle of the sexes. Now think of a time this week, or if you're more holy than me, maybe this month, or if you're even holier than that, maybe this year, think of a time when you've got angry, when you've lost your temper. I wonder if you can see some of those negative effects that led you to make some really unwise decisions, that it divided you from the people you love, that it made you a burden to others. That's the danger that anger brings. How do we fight this anger? Well, we've got to remember that right at the start of Proverbs, it told us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. We've got to start by asking, how does this affect our relationship with God? God has a day of his own anger set, where he will pour out his anger on the angry. The Bible tells us that God is slow to anger. Not that he doesn't anger, but that he is slow to anger. He doesn't respond in a hot-tempered way. He looks justly and righteously at the actions of everyone and says, this is right, this is wrong, this needs to be punished, this does not. And that is very, very bad news for those of us who lose our temper time and time again. But praise God, Jesus was perfect. He did get angry, but not hot-temperedly angry. He responded exactly rightly to sin in all of the ways that he saw it. He knew when it was right to speak and when it was right to be silent. He knew when it was right to challenge and when it was right to encourage. He was perfect in all of his relationships with others. He never responded in an emotional, hot-tempered way. And he, with that perfect life, went to the cross. And he bore God's wrath, God's anger, that should have been poured out on us for all of the anger and other sins that we had committed. The only way that we can deal with our anger is to come to Jesus first, to say, I need my sin forgiving. It is much deeper than I realized it was before. I know that what I have dealt to others, I deserve to have dealt to me by God. But I trust in Jesus, that he bore your anger in my place. That's where we've got to start. But that doesn't mean God says, oh, don't worry about your anger, it's fine, you know, I'll just forgive it with Jesus and then you can just carry on blowing off at people. No, God gives us the Spirit of wisdom, and he is helping us to grow out of those sinful patterns of life. The fruit of the Spirit is a slow but steady progress in fighting these sins. Now, it doesn't always feel that from our perspective. Lydia and I were doing a chapter on sanctification in Wayne Grudem's, and it was saying the Christian life, we kind of expect our holiness to be going like that, but it actually kind of goes like this, and it is slowly going up, but there's lots of downs on the way. That's often how it feels, particularly when we get convicted that there are sins in our life that we didn't think were there, but we see time and time again we're being challenged by, and maybe we need to do something about. So we need to recognize our anger. We need to tackle our anger. And Proverbs gives us a few suggestions to do that. It must be within the context of being forgiven by Jesus, of being born again by his Spirit. But there are things we can do to get less angry. And the first thing is to value patience, which is, of course, a fruit of the Spirit. Proverbs 14:29 says, and as many others who make the same comparison, whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. Anger is hot, it's also quick, it responds in the instant. And generally speaking, since we have sinful hearts, our instant response is often going to be the wrong one. And we should take a second to take ourselves in hand and say, I'm going to get myself out of this hot-tempered situation, I'm going to reflect, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to deal with it a lot better than I would have done if I responded in the moment. We should be patient. We should be slow. And Jesus helps us to do that, doesn't he? Because he is training our whole lives to be patient. He's teaching us what you get from me is not going to be instant gratification. It's going to be a long, slow process. Eventually, there will be heaven. There are also some good spots on the way, but it's a slow and steady journey. And in teaching us that whole way of life, he's also helping us when we face these instant situations of conflict to be able to slow it down and respond in a way that we're using our brains rather than our adrenaline system. So patience. Secondly, it encourages us to overlook insults. Fools show their annoyance at once, but the prudent overlook an insult. We would love it to be the case that we got angry at the insults of others, wouldn't we? But it's so often when somebody insults us that it really gets our tempers flaring. Jesus is a great example of this, isn't he? As he went to the cross, he had pretty much every insult under the sun hurled at him. And they were all untrue. They were all unjust. You and me, we might sometimes get insults that are true. Jesus didn't get any. And yet he was silent, like a lamb to the slaughter. He could have called down fire from heaven and he wouldn't have sinned to do so. But he kept his mouth shut. He overlooked the insult. And that's what we should do again. Why should we care what one person says about us when God says such amazing things about us? When he says, you are my son, you are my daughter, I will love you for all eternity. If we've got that as our status, our belief about what God thinks of us, what does it matter what some human being thinks in the moment? We should be able to overlook those insults because we know we've got a solid identity in the Lord Jesus Christ. We're also to respond to anger with grace. Chapter 15, verse 1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Sometimes people might respond in an angry way to you, and if you can respond with gentleness, as we said before, it's just throwing water on the flame. It calms things down, and that person might see that they actually stepped over the line and you're able to come to a better conclusion about things. And again, Jesus is the example. Harsh words were thrown at him, yet he patiently responded. I didn't mean that he was a doormat. He sometimes challenged, he sometimes responded, but he was always gentle and turned away the wrath as much as it was possible to do so. Finally, is one that we might not think of, that might actually seem strange to us, but to turn away from anger, we should trust God's vengeance, God's anger. So often what we want to do is we want vengeance, and frequently that is sinful vengeance. But there are some times where we want vengeance, ultimately we want justice. Someone has done a crime against us and we want them to have to pay for that crime. Someone has done something wrong to us and we want them to go through what we have gone through. Sometimes that's unjustified. Sometimes it's actually justified. For those Indians who are experiencing that persecution, it is justified. If they look on their church being torn down, to be angry and to want to do the same thing to the people around them. But Proverbs says, as does Romans, as does the whole Bible, not your desire for justice is wrong, but your desire for justice is not going to be solved by you. Proverbs 20:22, which is our last one for the evening, says this. Do not say, I'll pay you back for this wrong. Wait for the Lord, and he will avenge you. You don't know whether you're seeing the situation rightly or not, but God does. And you may not be able to enact justice, but God can. Now that justice won't come until Jesus comes again. It may do, I guess. It may be that they get taken to court, or maybe they come to see their own sinfulness and apologize. But generally speaking, waiting for the Lord will mean waiting until the final judgment. But if we're able to leave our anger with God, trusting that he, without sin, will be able to deal with it, then we'll be able to respond in a much more gracious way, even to those who have done actual wrong against us, not just our perceived wrongs. If you struggle with anger, I'd encourage you to maybe memorize some of these proverbs, or at least remember the idea behind them. Think on them in the moment when you're tempted. Remind yourself, oh yeah, a gentle answer turns away wrath. That's what I need to do right now. This person's angry with me. I need to be gentle. To go away and commit it to the Lord. The reason these proverbs are so small and pithy is that you can put them in your pocket if they're relevant to you, and you can keep hold of them. You can chew over them whenever you need them. Imagine you're in a house. In fact, this happened to us once. We came home from church one day to our carbon monoxide alarm going off. Not here, just so that the yokes all know that we're not burning down the house. It was when we lived in Stockton. And it was weird because there was no flames. There was nothing outwardly going on. And we thought it was nothing. But we decided we better do the right thing. We called up a gas engineer. We opened up all the windows. And then he came along and he found out that we'd had a gas leak. And if we just had ignored it, well, we would have been in a lot of danger. But that alarm went off, and we heard it, and we were able to respond rightly. These words from the scriptures might be giving you a carbon monoxide alarm, saying, you're angry, and it's dangerous. The temptation is to write it off and say, no, I'm not angry. My anger in this situation is justified, or they're more angry than I am. And what we need to do is to accept we're angry. We need to see the problems that come with anger. We need to see that only Jesus can deal with that anger. And we need to ask for the Spirit's help to fight that anger. And if we do, then we'll become different kind of individuals. We'll become a different kind of community where patience overrules anger. And that'll be a much happier place to be. So acknowledge that you are angry, if you are. Hate that anger. Give that anger to Jesus, and then fight that anger with everything you have. And slowly but surely, through your life, you'll see the Lord fighting against that anger and making you more patient and more like him in his slow to anger, patient and abounding love character.